This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Intercom's AI-first customer service platform is such an upgrade that everything else feels a little outdated. To whom it may concern, I find myself displeased with your product and wish to return it to you.
Dear customer, our deepest condolences. We're happy to assist you in this matter. Please provide your...
The future of customer service is here. Intercom is built on AI from the ground up to deliver fast, smart customer support. Intercom, AI first customer service.
What's up? What's happening? It is a Friday edition of the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And on a Friday, we have previewing to do. We have not only previewing most of the show of your NFL weekend and most of that, the Commanders and Cowboys, but a little later this hour, also a preview of a DC team that's going to be playing for a title this weekend. That's at 4:45, championship on the line. But we start, as we always do on Friday, first by saying hello to Anthony Haney, because otherwise that would be very rude, Anthony, if I did not say a proper hello. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, Craig.
Thanks for coming today. Thanks for coming to work.
Yes, I try. I try. Every day.
Yeah, that's good. And you succeed. You haven't no-showed yet. So you're trying, at least for showing up to work, is paying off. The job you do when you get here, questionable. But that's okay. That's all of us. just kidding, everybody. Anthony's doing a great job. So we start Friday with our keys to the game. And for the Commanders this weekend, I've been trying to think of a good analogy. Sometimes I do. And then, speaking of trying and failing, sometimes my analogies are terrible. But I think I actually, Anthony, have a pretty good analogy for the Commanders and Cowboys this weekend, specifically of kind of who the Cowboys are. Like, when you were facing the Eagles last week, you're facing a team that offensively is actually not dissimilar to the Cowboys in a lot of ways. Like, the way they go about these things is differently. So Mike McCarthy and Kellen Moore definitely run different schemes, different systems. But they are two teams that kind of play isolation basketball. And they want to get their playmakers in space and generate good matchups. And if you have some of the playmakers they've got, then, like, that makes a lot of sense. Why wouldn't you want to get Saquon Barkley and A.J. Brown and CeeDee Lamb and all these different guys the ball? But the difference is that when you're facing the Philadelphia Eagles, it is like you are facing the 2008 Boston Celtics or the 2015 or 2017 maybe, Golden State Warriors. And the reason I analogize it to those two teams is like, and really, it would be more the 08 Celtics because, the Warriors played this, like, beautiful, free-flowing basketball. And the Celtics would run Ray Allen around a bunch of picks. But the talent is the thing, right? It's like Rajon Rondo on those 08 Celtics teams would just always find Ray Allen, always find Paul Pierce. And inevitably, you could slow them down for a little bit, but one of those guys would hit a shot, or Kevin Garnett would make a play. And then if all else failed, if you get in total, like, oh, we need to have a bailout, you'd have Rondo go make a play himself. He would inexplicably hit a three, or he was, especially before he got hurt back in that 08 championship season, great at driving to the rim, and he'd hit a clutch layup, and you're like, God, we finally shut down everyone else. And then he would make a play. And that's exactly what happened to the Commanders last week, right? Is like, they most of the day held up against Barkley, most of the day held up against Brown and Smith. And then on a key 3rd-and-7 late in the game in the fourth quarter, Washington's got the lead, and Jalen just goes and runs for a first down by literally his fingertips. And then a couple plays later, Saquon finds the end zone, and then then Ray Allen hit three threes, in the analogy, right? If you're facing the Cowboys this week, talking about the offensive side of the ball, it's kind of like facing like the 06 Lakers, where Kobe would absolutely kill you. he could drop 50 on any given night. I mean, 06 is the year that he dropped 81. And other than that, they were terrible. And he's just like, man, I got Smush Parker trying to get me the ball. This ain't going to work. And that's kind of the Cowboys right now with Cooper Rush, a quarterback. Again, a guy who's won some football games before. I know Dan Quinn talked about that earlier in the week. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Cooper Rush, but he's Cooper Rush. He's not Dak Prescott. And CeeDee Lamb is capable of absolutely crushing you and generating something out of nothing. You know, I think that's something that Joe and Dan really, really emphasized this week, because they're emphasizing it in the press conference, that CeeDee came out of Oklahoma as a punt returner as well as a great receiver. He can take an ounce of space, a sliver, and just absolutely create a mega play out of it anywhere on the field. And there's only so much you can do about that. But you can double him. You can make that really hard. You can focus in on making sure he doesn't get that space. And if you did that to the 06 Lakers on Kobe, you just double him. Like, they weren't going to beat you. And that's kind of what Dallas is. And the thing is, that's actually who they are defensively. Like, Philadelphia defensively was complex. Their zone match stuff is really, really hard for quarterbacks, because it is a zone, but it plays like man. And that makes your reads really, really muddy. And then they have their, you know, tremendous personnel that's doing all that stuff. And so you've got good scheme, good personnel, and thus it can become a bit of a nightmare. And it was for Washington. Well, Dallas, they're also at this point, the 06 Lakers, and Micah Parsons is Kobe on defense, and that dude can wreck your day. But if you just put the requisite resources to him, like, they're actually not that hard to beat as a team. And so this line on Sunday is 10.5. And on Monday, on my picks show on YouTube, where I pick all the games against the spread, I picked Washington to cover it, because I just think the matchups for Washington are exactly what they want. They want a team that they can run the football on. That is who Dallas has been. They want to be able to generate big plays, explosive plays offensively, and a lot of that coming off quick game and letting their playmakers play, you know, in space. Eckler, Terry, Diami, like, these guys that have been good runners for them this year, that's who Dallas is. They're not a good space team. They haven't tackled well. They take bad angles. They let a lot of air. There's a lot of air in their defense generally. And then offensively, a team that can't run the football very well, which has kind of been Washington's, statistically speaking, it's been their Achilles heel. It's kind of, they've given up some big stuff, you know, if teams can run on them late in games, and Dallas is not going to be that team, or shouldn't be that team, because they don't have the firepower to get up in the first place. And offensively, like, down in, down out, they'll give you some opportunities to force some interceptions, and Washington has been more opportunistic of late. They can handle, like, one big star, because I think Dan, as a head coach, understands, like, stars win games, and he's not going to let the other team's stars win games if he can help it. If there's not so many that's impossible, you're not plugging a hole one place just to be leaky in another. Like, who cares if you're leaky against the run against Dallas? Like, you can play with a light box. Just get that other safety over top of CD at all times and don't let the bad stuff happen. And so I think for Washington this week, that is kind of how this game sets up from a matchup standpoint. The key is just don't give up the big plays. Be smart, you know, make sure that Mike is accounted for, make sure CD is accounted for. And I'm not going to say it's going to be an easy win, because it's a division game and there are no such thing as easy wins in the NFL. Just ask Pittsburgh last night. There's no reason the Browns should beat the Steelers, except for the part where they did. And so this does, though, remind me of a lot of games earlier in the season where you just look at the matchup and you go, man, if Washington executes the level that they are capable of and the game plan is as sharp as we think it should be, this could be another game where Washington easily drops a 40 burger. This could be a game where their defense looks pretty dominant. And that is even before we get to the fact that Washington is coming off of a mini bye after the Thursday night game, and Dallas is preparing for this game on a short week after getting their teeth kicked in on Monday Night Football against the Texans. So that's the long version, Anthony, of I feel pretty good about this one for Washington.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about it as well. I think the first 15 minutes of the game, essentially just getting off to a fast start, is important for the team. Dallas has been, you know, susceptible against allowing other teams to, you know, get up on them early. And, you know, sometimes Dallas has been able to, you know, rally and, you know, make the game interesting. But for the most part, just knowing us and knowing that Dak isn't that quarterback, I think getting out, getting a comfortable lead could just make it an easy day for the Commanders. So I would focus in on the start of the game, coming off the mini bye.
Yeah, I think that'd be huge. Like, you get up on this team. We talked about this earlier in the season, obviously, the game flow type of stuff. Mm-hmm. Where, like, you get up on this team and Cooper Rush all of a sudden has to throw the ball 40 times and Joe Witt Jr. can get in his bag as a blitzer.
Man.
You can dedicate, use double CD every time. You got seven guys in coverage on a lot of snaps, and you're bringing an extra rusher here, an extra blitzer to there. Like, it just becomes a much easier game for Washington, and one where they should be able to thrive. And the other big thing is, like, can they sustain drives? Because with B-Rob back in this week, and you know, I taped something earlier today, spoiler alert, but I taped something earlier today with my guy Andrew Filipponi, who hosts a show on the Odyssey app every Sunday, it's a FanDuel Ways to Win Radio. Pony does a great job, would highly recommend listening to it if you want a good preview of the NFL weekend. Again, it's Sundays on the Odyssey app, but we actually taped the game preview you'll hear for the Washington-Dallas game on that show today, and he's like, hey, how do you feel about Brian Robinson over rushing yards as a prop bet? And I was like, I actually feel pretty good about it because this, you know, one, Dallas is not a very good run defense. And two, because of the way Robinson runs, where it's not necessarily like the 70 yarder, but it's a bunch of 7 yarders in a row, that is an ability that creates an ability for him to stack carries and get 20, 25 carries potentially in this game. And even if he only gets 18 because they're like up late and they just don't want to put the wear and tear on him and they put McNichols in, like the idea that B-Rob could go 18 for 85 and 2 touchdowns is very much alive in this game, because unlike some of the other games where they haven't been able to sustain drives, like I think he'll get the opportunities. Like, you can't stack attempts if you don't have the plays to stack them. And I think the way that Washington is going to be able to play offensively in this game should lead to a high play total. And it also means the defense is fresher and more effective. And so that complimentary football that got them wins earlier in the season should hopefully be making its return to Northwest Field for the home team on Sunday. As for how the offense gets back on track in general, Logan and I talked about it on Take Command, and you'll definitely want to hear what Big Mr. Paulson has to say about that, and we're going to give you that preview next here on The Hoffman Show. It's The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Again, we are now streaming live on YouTube today. We'll be back on Monday on that platform. So if you're someone who likes to drive home and then listen on your smart TV or however you consume YouTube, you can still get the rest of the show. You're just going to have to listen to it. And if you really miss my face, I'm so terribly sorry. But we are putting up some of the highlights of the show on demand at Craig Hoffman and at the Team 980. Just not able to stream live because I'm on remote for one more day. And then back to DC, back to the normal schedule of events on Monday. Although we do have a short show Monday. And then we're live actually at Capital One Arena on Tuesday. So lots of stuff happening around the holidays here. Off on Wednesday as Maryland Hoops is playing in the afternoon. So get your Hoffman show fixed while you can, because it's in limited supply. It's a Black Friday special. I don't know. Okay, that's enough for that. Here's what I got for you right now. Take Command. Logan Paulson and I previewing Commanders and Cowboys. And we, in this part of the show, took a look at how Jaden Daniels and the Commanders offense can get back on track after their down day against Philly, against a Cowboys defense that's ripe with opportunity. Take Command Podcast. That's Logan Paulson. I am Craig Hoffman. All right, that's enough story time with Logan. Let's dive into the actual preview itself. Logan, let's start off with the Commanders offense, which is kind of dominating the narrative here as people are like, are they in a regression? Is it Jaden? Is it the injury? Is it Cliff in a regression? All of these things. We talked about this on the film review show with Philly, that we think a lot of this just has to do with the opponents. They look like teams playing, or an offense playing, some of the best defenses in football. And even in some of those matchups, they've done better than many other teams, including the Pittsburgh game where they put up 27 points. And Logan, have you ever done something or just had like a really rough patch of your schedule, like your life schedule, and you feel really constricted, and you look ahead to the task that's in front of you next after you survive that rough patch, and you just feel freedom? Because that's what it felt like watching the Cowboys defense on film. This is a unit that where there is air to be had. You can run the football on them. This feels much more like watching some of the units that this team put 40 on earlier in the season. That is not to say that they're not talented. It's not to say that Mike Zimmer is not a great coordinator. He's one of the really, you know, kind of godfather, grandfathers of a lot of tenants that are currently in a lot of NFL defenses. Obviously, the double A blitz package. So the two linebackers right there over the center just, you know, threatening over him at all times. So there's a lot to unpack here that we can get into, but this does feel like a chance for the Commanders offense to get back to the high scoring, high output ways that they had earlier in the season.
Yeah, I think so. And I think you described that really well, because it's not like that they're personnel wise, they don't feel bad. You know, they feel like they're fine. And it just feels like they're kind of almost like they're still learning the defense a little bit. Like when you watch some of the coverage stuff, you can tell guys aren't completely on the same page. When they're doing run fits, their nickel players are kind of in a weird bind and they're kind of late to the run fit and there's too much air and they miss a tackle. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the Commanders earlier in the year when it comes to some of the run fit stuff where there's a quarter player and he's fitting from depth and it's just too hard of a tackle. They didn't anticipate the run. And so I do think there's a lot of that. But also there's times where they flash, you know, like Micah Parsons will set a great edge and, you know, Mazi Smith and Digizua will kind of like work down line of scrimmage. They'll close it up. They'll bottle it in and the nickel player will come in and make a really nice tackle. You know, Devon Wilson does a great job of that, or Donovan Wilson, excuse me, does a great job of that. So there are plays and there are moments where you're like, oh, this is like good stuff. But I just think the consistency isn't there on a down to down basis. You know, they are kind of this quarters. They play a lot of Tampa 2. They play a lot of cover 3 more than I thought. And man coverage is probably a little bit down for them. And so I just think about, kind of to your point, you know, when Jaden does well, and he does really well when pre-snap he knows the coverage. Pre-snap he kind of can identify where the soft spot's going to be and then work through his progression really quickly. And I think that's what this game's going to afford him the opportunity to do. And I think you couple that with the ability to run the football. Because like I said, they do some good stuff in terms of stopping the run. They're physical. They're aggressive downhill. You know, before we're getting on, you talked about Eric Kendricks and kind of how he's got this old man kind of football to him where he's really savvy. He knows how to fit runs. And, you know, like they do a good job. But there are enough opportunities, and I think the Houston game encapsulates this perfectly, where they misfit stuff. They're not on the same page. They're not locked in, and it leads to explosive runs. They miss tackles. And so if B-Rob can get going, and again, we get back to this offense, the Commanders' offense gets back to this efficient first down when we're in second and six, we're in second and five, then everything's on the table for Kliff from a play-calling standpoint. I think we're going to see a version of the offense that we saw versus the New York Giants, versus the Bears, versus whoever. And again, this is not an indictment of them as a defensive group. It's just the consistency that we saw versus Philly, versus Pittsburgh. Their interior unit specifically also, I think, you know, the defensive tackles for Pittsburgh, the defensive tackles for Philly are a different caliber of group compared to this. And so all of those things that gave the Commanders offense issues aren't really present here the way that they've been the past couple of weeks. And so it does feel like it's an opportunity to get back on track. Now, you still need to prep. You still need to make sure you make the plays. You still need to make sure you're executing at a really high level and go out and punch these guys in the mouth. But defensively, schematically, personnel-wise, the opportunity feels a little bit less difficult.
Yeah, it's funny because there's like some real, not dichotomies, but there's some real like oxymorons almost in this defense where it's like, I feel like this is a defense that has a lot of team speed but doesn't play necessarily fast. If that makes sense, like they will have guys fly to the football individually, but it's not like they're on you right now in the way that there's the urgency and suddenness of Philly or Pittsburgh where all the windows are really tight and all that kind of stuff. So like you'll have a catch for 20 yards on a crosser and then Donovan Wilson will come down and hit you with some speed. But that speed would have been better applied earlier in the down to not allow the 20-yard crosser in the first place. You know, Mike is his own animal, and we can talk about him and why he's not been quite as impactful in a second. But I also think same thing inside. Like, you'll see Adigizua make an incredible, just like quick movement inside, get a sack. But he's also not the, like, they're light inside. And so you can move them and you see that show up. And some of the, sometimes that's the reason why some of these run fits are a lot harder, in the same way that we talked about with earlier in the season with the Commanders, right? Like, oh, Chin's missing tackles. It's like, yeah, the hole's 8 yards wide. It's pretty right. hard for a safety to do that. And so there's some yep. of that that's happening at times as well. And so it's an interesting defense because Mike Zimmer's great. A lot of their players have really good traits. It doesn't feel like it fits together in any kind of cohesive way.
Yeah, and again, like, that group's been playing in the Dan Quinn defense for a couple of years now. And so, you know, you can tell there's some new rules, some new setups. They are carrying, I don't want to say a lot of volume, but probably more volume than they did with Dan. Like, Dan, you were playing, or when he was the defensive coordinator in Dallas, it's like you were playing a lot of man, you were playing a lot of Tampa 2, and that's what you did. And so now they've got quarters, and quarters has different rules versus different formations and fronts. You've got cover 3, you've got your man, you've got Tampa 2, you've got you mentioned the double A package that he's kind of notarized and brought to the NFL. That's still a big part of them, but that is complicated to do up front, right? And on third down, like, that's a whole install you got to do. And so it just feels like there are times where they're not super locked in on every single detail, not super locked in on exact run fits, not super locked in on exactly how to pass certain things off. And there are times where you're like, that is for sure wrong. That can't be how they're supposed to do it. And there's a guy wide open, like you were talking about on the crosser, for example. Like, usually in quarters, right? So then when there's four guys across the back of the defense, a corner, safety, corner, and the guy's running across the formation, usually the backside safety is supposed to cut that guy, right? But they aren't communicating it well. They aren't on the same page all the time, and it leads to explosive plays. And that's what they're usually supposed to do, but sometimes, depending on the call or depending on the formation, maybe the front side guy is supposed to cut and supposed to play like man. Like, and you can just tell they're not all the way there with some of those details. And I think I think, honestly, if the offense was playing better, we wouldn't be talking about the defense as being the 31st worst, you know, run defense, the 29th worst defense in terms of points. I don't think we're talking about them quite that same way. But the fact is, the offense isn't supporting them, and they're having some of these kind of mental breakdowns and miscues. And I think it's leading to a defense that is out on the field way too much and is exposed to more of these opportunities. Because I think when you watch some of the Houston game, like, they do a good job early, right? They kind of, you know, they get a good pass rush going. And again, Houston's offensive line is not good at the moment, or they're not playing well at the moment. And, you know, they do some good things. They create pressure. They create tight window throws. But again, the more they're on the field, the more opportunity the offense has to throw stuff at them, the harder time they have, and the less effective they are.
Yeah. One thing that Houston was able to do to alleviate some of that pressure was get the screen game going. So maybe this week is the week that finally that gets back going for Washington. That'd be cool. They've obviously had a couple weeks to retool it, and or not a couple weeks, but 10 days to retool it. And I'm sure they're working on stuff full speed and practice and all that kind of stuff. And the timing, that's something that Dan talked about in his presser on Wednesday, was, you know, hey, what has been helped by this extra time and by getting to practice again? He's like, the timing of, you know, offensively and defensively, certain route concepts. But we know the screen game is all about timing and coordination, the run game, timing and coordination. So hopefully that is something that can potentially come back. And, you know, or yeah, you wanted to follow up on that real quick?
Yeah. And I think that's maybe the most important thing I take away from watching the Dallas film is, you know, they are what they are. But I look at, you know, kind of watching the Pittsburgh film of the offense, the Philly film of the offense, and say, man, like, they're not executing the way they need to execute. And so when I hear Dan say, oh, yeah, we got more practice time in this week because it's a longer week, guys are fresher, we had 2 days off, we're fresh enough, we can actually practice on Wednesday, we can do what we need to do. That, to me, Dallas is what Dallas is. They're having their issues. But our offensive execution is the thing that drives this. And nothing has illuminated that for me more than, like, when I was playing and now that when I coach. Like, you can put the best plays in the world in. You can put them all in. You can be the smartest guy on paper. Kyle used to do this, right? It would just be like the perfect play, right? But if
we can't... How could it possibly go wrong?
Right. How could it possibly go wrong? But it was, we didn't know the details. We didn't know exactly how to block it up versus this pressure. We didn't know exactly how to run the route versus this coverage. And now you've given the guys the opportunity to say, hey, let's really lock in on our execution and let's really own this versus all these different fronts and different looks. And that's, to me, like, kind of the stuff you've been talking about with the screen game. That's the stuff you've been talking to me about, you know, with the pass concepts in general. And I think this is the thing, is Dan is always so good at being like, It's about us. And when you talk to Cliff, he's like, it's about our execution. And I think those two things are so good to hear from the offensive play caller and the head coach. And so really, it doesn't really, I mean, it matters what's going on with Dallas, but like that is the thing that I'm really excited about this week is we've got more time on task to own and execute this game plan at a high level.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I will also say this, as much as it is about us, so to speak, if you're the offense and that's what you're preaching, to try to get as close to perfection as possible, it doesn't have to be quite as perfect against this defense as it did against Pittsburgh or against Philadelphia or against Baltimore or against Cleveland. Like the margin for error is a lot wider because they're not as good. There is more air. That angle doesn't have to be quite as sharp on that route because the defensive back has given you four extra yards for no good reason because they're not as good and as locked in on their details. So that should be said as well. One of the things we actually got I got a YouTube comment earlier in the week that I wanted to bring up. I meant to talk about this, or we meant to talk about this on the Tuesday show, but Terry McLaurin had been on an absolute heater going into that Philly game. And then obviously he does not have a productive day, barely heard from at all. All the wide receivers pretty much barely heard from at all against Philadelphia. What happened, to that end? And then, you know, do we expect a bounce back game from Terry, not just in terms of his production, but in terms of his involvement in the offense and kind of the intentionality with which Cliff had been getting him the football?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm very confident that this is a game that the offense gets back on track. And the reason I say that is for a lot of the reasons we just talked about, you know, with the coverage structures that they're playing, how they're playing them. I know we've talked about this a lot, but Philly was very good. They were very good at playing their coverage structures, at matching concepts, at being on the same page. And there was a lot of stuff that they did that where you could tell they were aware. And I don't know if it was they were aware of Terry specifically, but they were definitely aware of formation and what Cliff liked to do. So when Terry's by himself, he's been killing. He's been doing a great job. So like, we're going to run a slant, but hey, no, we're going to drop a linebacker right underneath that slant. Oh, hey, we're going to run a vertical, but we're going to have a guy underneath that just so the corner can play a little bit higher. And so like, again, I don't know if that was specifically for Terry or if that was based on formation. And that's something you have to talk to Vic Fangio about, but that was a well-coached, well-locked-in group that executed a high level. And I don't see that same level of detail from the Dallas Cowboys, at least as of right now. And again, people turn around, they can make big, they can make shifts at the end of the year, whatever. But I don't see that from them. So I do think it's just going to be like Cliff's going to call the offense, they're going to run the offense. And with this Cliff Kingsbury offense, we've talked about this before, when they get that momentum, when they get in that no-huddle mode, they kind of start stringing plays together, it simplifies the defense. You're going to find opportunities for Terry, whether that's on vertical routes, whether that's on hitches, whether it's slants, digs, and you're going to be able to get him involved. Now, I don't know if they're going to say we have to get Terry touches in the way that, like, we'll talk about this in a second, but like the way Mike McCarthy in Dallas does with CeeDee Lamb. I don't know if that's the best version of this offense, but he'll definitely get involved because I do think the offense will be able to find a rhythm. Like when you look back at the Philly game, it was hard, man. It was like Cliff really had every play call had to be good. Every execution had to be good. That's not going to be the case here. We're going to get in rhythms. We're going to get string plays together and find ways to get Terry touches.
Yeah, I don't think the best version of this offense has CeeDee Lamb CeeDee Lamb levels of touches for Terry. However, I do think that there's clearly something between what happened in the Philly game and a CeeDee Lamb level that is a happy medium. And I appreciate that Cliff has a players not plays approach. And Dan also has some level of that, of like, we got to get our studs the ball. And so that, while it can happen for a game, I just think that as long as this administration is here, there will not be these extended droughts for their best players in terms of production, because they know that's not how you win. They are very good at not losing the forest through the trees. And so I don't know what that's going to look like. I would try to be getting Terry on some slants and some digs and like some horizontal stuff. You're going to try to get him vertical some, but like Dallas will give you that air and that space horizontally if you can get him into the teeth of the defense, hit him in stride and let him run. In the way that we saw the RPO against Pittsburgh, you know, that, hey, Terry, we're going to give you another one of those. And this time, don't get caught. Joey Porter Jr. Ran him down, obviously. So I think that getting him some of those opportunities is going to be key. And it's something that I think that they absolutely will be trying to do. And it's something that I think they probably will do with some level of success, probably a high level of success on Sunday.
No, I 100% agree. And I 100% agree with that. And I think they'll get him touches. The other thing I wanted to point out too, and you talked about this in the last question, was, you know, like you think it'll be easier to execute schematically. You know, it'll be easier to kind of get on rhythm. And I also think like the one-on-one matchups in this game are a little bit more favorable for the Commanders offense. You know what I mean? That's something else we haven't really talked about specifically up front, where it's like against Philly, against Pittsburgh, you got some absolute war daddies on the defensive line inside. And I think this defense, this offensive line does really well when it's like, hey, you know, we can run our pin pull stuff. We can get after guys. And I think that when you look at Odighizuwa, a really good pass rusher, I think Mazi Smith is playing better than people think. But again, you know, not playing to the same level as like Jalen Carter or, you know, the dude from Pittsburgh or, you know, whoever it is, right? Like, I think those interior matchups are going to be so much more favorable for Washington this week. And that's something that I just wanted to kind of point out and just double click on. Like, yeah, we're going to get Terry touches, but I do think managing that interior defensive line, specifically in the run game, is going to help B-Rob be efficient, help Austin be efficient. And when those guys are super efficient, the offense is super efficient. And then all of a sudden, those touches to Terry are more important. The quick game becomes more impactful. The keeper play action game becomes more impactful. So that's something I just wanted to point out too, is like you mentioned, individual matchups are better. And those are probably two of the most important individual matchups that I think Washington will be able to exploit.
Last but not least on this Cowboys defense, and certainly not least, in fact, he's the number one thing that'll be in the meeting this week. What do you do with number 11? And is that easier now than it was, say, when these two teams matched up last year and the guy in the backwards hat was calling plays for Dallas versus being the head coach in Washington?
Yeah, it definitely seems easier than it was last year. I mean, last year, I think Dan did such a good job of being like knowing what Micah did really well and finding him good matchups. Like there's times where he's lined up over the center. He's lined up as a three technique. He's lined up as a five, you know, so like outside shoulder to the tackle, or he's lined up as an off ball backer and he's on a stunt coming in. And so it's like, how do we target this rush? And so some of that stuff you see this year with Frankie Louvu, and how productive has Frankie been kind of rushing from all these different spots? Same thing with Dorrance Armstrong or Fowler, like just giving guys opportunities
Payne's
to attack
playing some more on the
pass rusher with, yeah, but just attacking with more varied angles and giving the tackles different stuff to think about, or the offensive line different stuff to think about. Now with Zimmer, I think Zimmer's a really, really outstanding defensive coach, but it seems like Micah's lining up kind of almost exclusively on the defensive left, so over the right tackle. And again, Micah is a beast. He's one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. You know, definitely top three, I would say, you know, depending on who you talk to, depending on the year, but he is a dominant, dominant player. And that's great. Dominant. He's going to dominate who's ever over there. But the good thing for an offense is if you know he's going to light up on the right, we can know how to send our protections. We can know how to send, where to send our chip out formationally. We know how to, whether we want to run at him or run away from him, we can kind of get that all called up because we know he's not going to be moving around the front as much. So I had a conversation at the combine with an offensive line coach, and he was like, oh yeah, we had a great plan for Micah Parsons a couple of years ago. And all we did was just make sure he was either getting chipped or sifted. So where the tight end lines up. So if Micah's on the defensive left, the tight end would be on the right. You come back across the formation and you just cut him down. It's like, we just try to do that as much as possible so that he was thinking and kind of not being aggressive up the field because he didn't want to get cut. And now that opportunity becomes even easier because you understand where he is all the time. And I think that's something that is really important and a variable that I think, while he's a dominant football player, makes him somewhat easier to manage. It reminds me of like when we played against Myles Garrett in 2017 when I was with Atlanta. And we were so worried about him, but he always lined up on the offensive left. And so you kind of knew, like, the protection side goes this way. We want to run away from him, so we're always going to run to the right. And you just could manage that a little bit differently. And I think that's going to be very helpful in this matchup versus Micah Parsons and the Dallas Cowboys, because you know where he's going to be every single play.
All right, for the full preview from me and Logan, including what you do on the other side of the ball and how the rest difference makes a difference this week, Dallas on a short week, Commanders on a long week, and just the general familiarity that these two teams have. Great story about Logan doing an install when he was in Houston for J.J. Watt and company as they were getting ready to face one of his former teams. Then check out Take Command, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. Coming up next, before we check in with my guy Mike Leslie down in Dallas and get a report on the Cowboys at 5, is there a D.C. athlete who has a chance to cement themselves with a spot on DC Sports Mount Rushmore with a win this weekend? I think there is, and I will tell you who and why next on the Hoffman Show. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And I got a proposal here, as there is a DC team that is going to play for a championship this weekend. And I think if one of their players plays a key role, especially, but even frankly, if this team just wins, that they would have a clear stake at a spot on DC Sports Mount Rushmore, which is incredibly impressive considering that athlete is still only 22 years old. That athlete is Trinity Rodman. And that team is the Washington Spirit. They face on, they take on Orlando Pride, this weekend in the NWSL Championship game tomorrow night. That game is at 8 o'clock. It's on CBS. And the NWSL is the best, the deepest and best, women's soccer league in the world. This is not some second-rate league in any kind of way for those that are unfamiliar. And you could probably imagine that considering the success of the U.S. women's national team. And the Spirit have, just continually been one of the better teams over the past couple of years. They won the championship in 2021, and now, they are on the verge of their second in 4 years. And I think that the fact that they would be the first two-time champs in DC sports in recent memory slash any memory since the Washington football teams of the late 80s, early 90s, even those were a little bit more spread out. But like, that's thought of as a trio of championships. But outside of that, how many Washington sports stars have multiple rings? The answer is none. Like, it's just not a part of Washington sports history. There aren't dynasties. There's one. It's the football team. And kind of the famous thing about that trio of teams is Coach Gibbs got it done with three separate quarterbacks. And so there wasn't ever this driving force, this singular force. You obviously have guys like Darryl Green, who are Hall of Famers that have three rings. There's a couple other players, the Hogs, there's multiple members of the Hogs that have multiple rings, but it wasn't like the quarterback in the way that like Brady powered the Patriots dynasty, or Mahomes is currently what he's doing with Kansas City. It's not a basketball dynasty where LeBron got two rings in Miami and he obviously has two more as well. It's not Jordan. It's not any of those. And soccer is a 11 person game. There are always going to be multiple factors. Aubrey Kingsbury, what the performance she put on in the semifinal, for those that may have missed it, she faced three penalty kicks as the game went to a penalty shootout. She stopped all three. That is unheard of. And she did it. And she was the goalkeeper of the year in 2021 when they won the title the first time. So she plays an enormous role. Andy Sullivan, although she is out right now with injury, has been the heart and soul of this team for as long as they have been competitive in this recent stretch. There are other great players that have been around, but Trinity is the best of them all. She was a rookie in 2021 and arguably the best player on the team. She is this year coming off winning a gold medal with the U.S. She was an MVP finalist, ultimately losing out on that award correctly, to Tembo Shawinga of Kansas City. But she is the best player on the second seeded team in the league that, if they beat the best team in the league, Orlando, this weekend, would have two championships to her name at the age of 22 years old. And that is rarefied air in any sport, but especially in the lineage of DC sports history. And just because the Spirit haven't been around for 50, 60 years, like, you know, the Commanders have or the Wizards have, or it's not a legacy sport like Major League Baseball, I do think that the NWSL is at a point in its trajectory now that it belongs in these conversations. It's one thing when you're, you know, oh, it's an 8-team league. Like, what are we really talking about here? But this is a sport that now has billions of dollars invested in it around the world. This is a 16-team league where, you know, 12 of the 16 teams are good, which is a higher percentage than most professional leagues. And she is legitimately one of the best players in the world. And that is also something that we can't often say about DC athletes. We've had some great ones come through, but Ovechkin is in a category of his own here, where the last 25 years, you know, he has been truly one of the best in the sport. You know, I think Harper had some stretches when he was a national where he was one of the truly five best players in the sport. But we are talking about one of the very best players in the world by any metric, any measure, ask any expert. Seemingly getting better, even though it feels like she's at the peak of her powers. And if she wins on Sunday, and if they win on Sunday, she would be sitting on two championships before her 23rd birthday. And I just don't see how you keep that person out of the best DC athlete of all time conversation. That is not something that a lot of people can say for their full careers. Nevertheless, 4 years of one where she would have won those two championships and been the driving force in many ways behind them. Anthony, do you feel like that is a crazy take, or is it the most logical take?
I wouldn't say it's a crazy take. I think when I think of players that have, you know, given this city years, I think they'll probably come to mind first. You got the John Walls, at least in my generation anyway. You have... who else? I'm blanking right now.
Well, this is part of the problem, right? Is like, yeah, there aren't a lot, right?
There aren't a lot.
John for sure is up there, and what he meant to the city and the culture and all that kind of stuff.
You got
is,
Zimmerman. You got Alex Ovechkin. Granted, sure, like a lot of those players, I mean, to the point you made about, you know, not having a lot of championships, it's more so they've given us years as opposed to like Brett Hart way here.
100%. And that would be the thing, right? Trent, yeah, would then have to stay for years, yes, and to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But like Ovechkin etched in stone. He's one of the greatest players in the history of his sport. He has spent an entire 20 years here in DC. He has won a championship. Like Ovechkin is the one to me above all others that has his spot inarguably etched in DC sports Mount Rushmore. And again, Mount Rushmores are kind of silly because if we picked a different monument, we could get more than four, but it also kind of makes it fun. So like Ovechkin, done. If you're going to pick a Washington player in the history of the franchise, Commander on back, right? Darryl Green's maybe the best to ever, mm-hmm, like relative to his peers at his position. He's a true Hall of Famer. You know, like there's others, obviously, like Dexter Manley was great. You know, Charles Mann was great in varying levels of greatness in terms of Hall of Fame or accolades. You know, B. Mitch, like one of the greatest return men of all time, should be in the Hall of Fame. Ridiculous that he's not. You know, up and down the list, but Sonny, you know, Sonny Jurgensen, obviously. And there's tremendous, tremendous players who mean so much to the city and so much to the history of one of the most historic organizations in the history of the sport. But there aren't a lot that can say, like, I was a driving force behind multiple championships.
Yeah.
You know, Joe, if you want to include coaches like Joe Gibbs, okay, well, that changes the math on that.
Yeah,
Joe is the one you pick from that team. The Wizards, like, it has to be Wes Unseld, because he's the best player on the only championship team they've ever had, and they haven't won 50 games since 1979. So, like, all due respect to John or Brad or anyone else you want to throw out for the last Gil, you know, some of those guys have longevity, some of those guys have this, some of those guys have that. Like, they just didn't win. Like, they didn't ever made a conference final. And so, you like, yes, because of his time here, would I put John still above Trin? For now, yeah. But if Trin stays, you know, even 6 years and wins two championships, nevertheless a third in that time, like, what are we really talking about here? Because it just, I think the larger point of, instead of getting in the silly sports radio argument, mm-hmm, of who's really on Mount Rushmore, is like the rarefied air she could enter this weekend is truly air that no one else in DC sports history in the last 30 years, at the very least, exists in. And very few could probably really legitimately state claim to. Certainly no one outside of those that wore burgundy and gold in the mid-80s and early 90s.
No, I would definitely agree.
That's the list.
Yeah.
So that game, 8 o'clock tomorrow night, going to be a lot of fun. Orlando's a bomb squad. They're so good. They're the best team in the league this year. Washington has what it takes to upset them. If you want more on that game, I did a full women's soccer or WOSO show with Andre Carlisle and Jason Anderson. That is out in the Hoffman W Sports podcast feed now. It is on its way to my Hoffman W Sports YouTube page as quickly as the internet that I'm working with will let it. And that will be up if you want to listen to it before the show or before the game tomorrow night, or watch it before the game tomorrow night. As for right now, back to the Commanders-Cowboys game for most of the rest of the show. We'll go around the NFL at 5:30. But my pal Mike Leslie joins us next from WFAA-TV, the ABC affiliate in Dallas, with a report on the sad football team that he covers.